Hello, my name is Nyamka, and I want to thank you so much for joining me for my podcast, Rebranded Christianity. And the title of the teaching for this podcast is Gandhi's Rejection, Divorcing the Legacy of White Christian Racism, Part 2. And I'm going to say that again, Gandhi's Rejection, Divorcing the Legacy of White Christian Racism, Part 2. So pretty much this is a four-part series. You're listening to part two right now. Part two is basically me discussing my personal experiences with white Christian racism in the church. I give a background on growing up in some pretty racist environments in Chicago and how that sort of helped me to sort of really see how racism is played out, and then my experiences in the church. So this is definitely more of a personal reflection portion of this podcast or this teaching series. Part one is where I give an introduction, where I lay like an historical context, a current social context. I give a background on why I'm actually doing this series. So I want to thank you so much for sticking with me for this series. I really hope that it's going to be a blessing to you. I hope it's informative. I hope it's enlightening, and I hope that it inspires some type of action specific to what God may be putting on your heart. So before I get into the teaching for this podcast, I do want to just plug a few things that I am working on right now. So I have a web-based television program. It's called 50 Faith Motivate, and that program can be found on YouTube under my username, Nyamka Ward, and also it can be found on Vimeo. So the Vimeo page is vimeo.com/NyamkaWard. And 50 Faith Motivate is basically like 1 to 3 minute segments, so very short, of faith PowerPoints, where I basically just take the location that I'm in. I live in New York. I'm from Chicago. So I just shoot segments in different locations, and I just tie it into a spiritual lesson or a way that we can apply the natural world around us to our spiritual lives. So I think it's pretty cool. I would love for you to check it out. I also have a blog post. It's entitled, or a blog. It's entitled A Christian Girl in Her Carnal World: Contemplative Stories of Faith Intertwined with Life in Urban America. So this blog, which is a manuscript, is pretty much dealing with just to me a part of Christian life in the United States that's not really told, and that's people that are living out their faith in cosmopolitan big city USA. So normally the bulk of the stories of Christianity is they're coming from the Bible Belt appropriately. They're coming from conservative America. And also there are stories about life in the inner city. But the telling the stories of people that are living in the cosmopolitan, eclectic, sometimes upscale, big city neighborhoods, and they're walking out their faith, those stories are really not really told. And that's the purpose of this blog, telling growing up with my faith, living in these type of environments. So the website is nyamka.wordpress.com. And finally, you're listening to this podcast, Rebranded Christianity. I would love for you to subscribe to the podcast if you have not done so already. And I also would love for you to, if you think that the information that's being shared here is going to be helpful to somebody, if you think it's going to be enlightening and inspirational to a person, I would love for you to forward this over to friends, family, or colleagues, whoever you may think that it could be a blessing to. So I want to just jump right into the teaching for this podcast. And like I said, this is part two of Gandhi's Rejection. I'm using this part to just really give a really in-depth personal experiences and personal reflections based upon the experiences that I've had with white Christian racism in the United States. So I have a blog post entitled Mr. Colorblind and Me. And if you have the opportunity, I would love for you to check that out. But in that blog post, I discuss growing up in a black working class neighborhood in Chicago and attending junior high in a white working class neighborhood in the city. Both of these environments were extremely racist, and it was during this time in my life that I noticed the different reasonings behind racism in these different communities. The black Black people were angry, they were bitter, and they were hurt about centuries of unjust, brutal mistreatment and oppression by white people. On the other side, the racism I experienced from the white people who lived in my school's neighborhood was that they hated black people because they viewed them as the most inferior of all races of people. It was white supremacy. And it was not just black people that they viewed as inferior, but blacks were the ones that they hated the most. And a typical school day for me was hearing racial slurs about just about every non-white people group in the world. A most prominent fact about the school's neighborhood is that the majority of its residents were Christians. I was delivered from these environments, from these hostile, racist environments that I had grown up in, when my family moved to the near north side of Chicago and I attended Lincoln Park High School. During my time at Lincoln Park, an extremely diverse high school when I attended there, and a true example of a melting pot, race was never an issue, and racism was not a part of the culture of that school. What else was not a part of the culture of that school was religion. It was a very liberal and free-spirited, artsy and intellectual environment, and it was not religious at all. And see, this is correlating to the findings of the study that I cited in part one of this series, the study entitled Why Don't We Practice What We Preach, where that study found that the most devout or the most religious people exhibited like the highest amount of racism or racist views towards people of other races. And the people that were like the least devout in this study, they noticed that they had that their racism was not nearly as high as the people who were the most religious people. Now, when I left the cosmopolitan world of the north side of Chicago and attended college in Missouri, racism, segregation, and discrimination were introduced back into my educational experience. Because of my experiences growing up, even though I recognized it and it saddened me, I wasn't affected by it as much. I was in this conservative, predominantly Christian environment, and as usual, racism and racial segregation was part of the environment. They just go together. The more, you know, religious, the conservative, and the racism is just right there in those environments. And I just want to just make a quick side note here. I don't want to seem like I'm exalting liberal America or liberalism or and I'm bashing conservative America. I am absolutely a independent politically. I just think there's good and bad things on both sides of our political token. However, one thing that I have noticed is that this has just been my experiences in life, is that when I'm in very conservative atmospheres, that's when I've noticed the people are so, they're prejudiced, they're very discriminatory, and there's a lot of racism. I've just noticed that. So there's something with that. You know, like I said, everything has got, you know, the good and the bad. We're not in heaven. But for the purposes of discussing racism and discrimination, I have noticed that very much so as a characteristic in conservative environments and also Christian environments, which people feel like they go hand in hand. But really, if you really know biblical philosophy and conservative philosophy, they are not mirror images of each other. Now, let's just move on with the teaching. About 6 years after college is when I began to become startled again by racism, and this is what caused it. When I came home from college, I started to become more serious about living out my faith in the form of being a part of a church community involved in Christian service and the Great Commission. And my commitment to this lifestyle change, this new level of my spirituality and commitment to my faith, the organizations, i.e. ministries and churches that I connected with were predominantly white. And this has been the case through my present time here in New York. When I made a decision to join these organizations, my focus wasn't on the race of the people in them, but my connection to their purposes and beliefs. So I was honestly like, as far as, yes, you recognize somebody's skin complexion, you do see it, but as far as making judgments and actions based upon somebody's skin color, I wasn't doing that. I just felt like if this church or this ministry is there ministering and doing things and promoting things that I really felt a connection with, I was going to be a part of it. It didn't matter the fact that, you know, maybe I was maybe one or two or three. I was, you know, in a minority as far as, you know, the black people or the people of color were a very much a minority. These were predominantly white churches and organizations that I was sort of connecting with. Now, one of the things that I noticed was that it was a pattern of behavior would occur that I observed for years, including my experiences with the Christian community here in New York. And this was the behavior. After church was over and it's off duty from formal ministry service, I would hang out and fellowship with my Christian brothers and sisters. And as I stated, the overwhelming majority of the time during these fellowship experiences, I was around white Christians. The majority of the people were white. And I'm going to estimate that about 50% of their non-spiritual conversation was racial stereotypes and specifically relating to black people. And I'm not exaggerating. It was like if it was just a non-spiritual conversation, it just seemed like 50% of the discussion was just racial stereotypes. And when this first started happening, I felt uncomfortable, but I wouldn't say anything. I knew because I was told why they felt comfortable making these comments in front of me. And I wrote about this phenomenon in my blog post, Out and Undercover. Unfortunately, because of racism, and this is the reason why my white brothers and sisters, when I would fellowship with them, I felt comfortable making racist comments and, you know, racial stereotyping jokes and things of that nature. Here is the reason why they felt comfortable talking like that in front of me. And I am a Black American. It's because of racism, the stereotype of a Black person, specifically in my case, a Black woman, is that she is a ghetto girl, an uneducated, ignorant acting woman who sounds as if she's illiterate, and at best, an educated but angry sister with an attitude, masculine and sassy, pretty much the antithesis of femininity. But because I didn't fit into either of these stereotypes, I wasn't viewed as a Black girl, just as Naya, and people felt comfortable making degrading, stereotypical comments about Black people around me. I do want to share with you some of the things that have been said to me, just to give you a picture of what I've experienced. And when I'm speaking about things that have been said to me, racist comments that have been said to me, or that I have, you know, been told about, by white Christians. So a friend told me that if a Black person wasn't a loudmouth, a colorful character, she didn't notice that they were Black. She stated that the quiet Black people at her job, she did not recognize them as Black. She recognized the Black people, or she recognized that the people were Black when they were loud and colorful characters. And I want to point out something. The people that made these comments to me were like really involved in ministry. If everything that you would know about their lives, they came across as very devout people. And these were comments that they were making to me. Another friend who was dating a Black guy told me that she was concerned about the hair texture of her children if she had children with a Black guy. She did not want them to have hair like Black people. In another situation, I walked over to talk to a friend who was on a computer. When I walked over to him to talk to him, on his computer screen, he has up a website that has all these racist jokes on it. Obviously, he has to say something because I'm there, you know, at this computer, and I walk up on him doing this. So he starts to tell me about how, you know, he had this moment when he realized that he was innately scared of black men. He said he was at an airport and he saw people of all races, but he felt a sense of fear when he saw black men. He noted that he had never had a negative experience with black men, but just this sense of fear came over him when he saw them. A couple of girls, in another situation, a couple of girls laugh at the racist joke that one of their fathers said to his black foster daughter. He told her to keep her eyes open so that he could locate her in the dark. In another situation, a group of church members are gathered together in a small group setting, and one of them decides to repeat racist comments made about a black girl in the group that she thought was funny and apparently thought other people would find funny as well. The racist comments that she thought people would find funny, they came from a man who was in leadership the last time I checked. He was in leadership at their church. Okay. And I'm going to actually talk about this particular man in leadership at this church. I'm going to talk a little bit more about him in depth and some other comments that he's made, because actually he was really one of the people that he just made it hit home really with me how serious a problem racism is in the contemporary Christian community. But going back to the story, so this girl wants to tell these racist comments that she thinks are funny that she heard from this man in leadership at her church. These are racist comments that he made about a black girl. And this black girl was in this group setting where these racist comments that were believed to be funny were going to be repeated. So this is what he said. He said that he was surprised that this black girl could not sing at a louder volume because she was a plus-sized black woman. So these comments were repeated because, you know, the girl that was repeating them thought that they were funny. But the black girl who the comments were made about, she didn't think it was funny. I don't think it's funny either. I really don't. And she was really hurt about it. And she came back and told me about the experience. Now, the amount of comments, I'm not even going to get into the amount of comments that I've heard about how the majority of black people depend on government benefits and that black people are the race of people that make up the majority recipients of these benefits. It's just so saddening to me. And the number one reason why this whole black people, all black people are on welfare, you know, all black people are dependent upon the government. The reason why these comments are so saddening to me is, one, because they're not true. And believing something like that when it's not true is just evidence of a terrible inferiority mentality towards an entire group of people. And what I want to interject within this line of discussion is to point out a few facts from a 2010 government statistics from the U.S. Office of Budget and Management. These are statistics directly from the government. Black people make up 22% of America's poor and receive only 14% of government welfare benefits. This includes Social Security benefits, unemployment compensation, TANF or temporary assistance to needy families, and SNAP benefits, which are also known as food stamps. Okay, I want to point that out again. These are 2010 government statistics from the U.S. Office of Budget and Management. Black people make up 22% of America's poor and receive only 14% of government welfare benefits. Now, I will not get into racial comparisons, but 14% is not close to the majority line and is clearly not the majority. One of the most racist people that I've ever encountered in my life is the man who I just referenced his comments that he made about a plus size black woman, that he was surprised she couldn't sing louder because she was plus size and she was black. He is to me like one of the most racist people I've ever met. And he's, the last time I checked, he was in a very prominent leadership position at a church here in New York. And I do want to just discuss, I just want to just talk about some of the few very racist comments that he's made, because they were really what it was like the straw that broke the camel's back for me. I just was like, you know, this is, I knew it was a problem, but it was like it just brought it just full circle in my head. Like, this is so saddening that people that are proclaiming Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior just have these type of racist views towards people that God created. It's such a hypocrisy, but it's just horrible. So I want to just now talk about some of the things that he said because I want you to just sort of see how this pushed me over the edge. The first indicator that I had of his racism, the first time that there was just a red flag that indicated that, you know what, this person may possibly have some serious views that are racist or just be a racist in general. The first time that happened was that a group of us were out to dinner, and I want to pause right there and just say, now, why would a person that I became to know as one of the possibly the most racist people that I've ever met in my life, why would he be out to dinner with me, a black person, if he's such a racist? And the answer to that question lies in something I talked about earlier, and that is people viewing, in this particular case, black Americans through a lot of negative stereotypes. And if you don't fit into those stereotypes, then possibly they don't even recognize you as being black. So in his particular case, he viewed black Americans as government dependent ghetto people. And because I don't fit into that mold, he didn't view me as entirely black. And I'm saying this because this is, I'm basing this on comments that he's made. He actually described one of my other black female friends as being black white because even though her racial classification was black, she didn't act like the stereotypical ghetto girl, which to him was the standard behavior of a black woman. Therefore, her conduct was that of a white woman, hence the term he used, the term black white. It was classification of her race, black, and her conduct, which would be considered mainstream civility. So therefore, that was white. She was a black white girl. Now, let's go back to the dinner. We were having a political discussion, and he makes the comment, black people and welfare. I said to him, after he made this comment, I said to him that the majority of black people are not on welfare. And it was as if I didn't say anything at all. He didn't comment on what I said. He didn't say anything. It was just as if I may have probably not have even been speaking. I may have even been speaking to myself. And the sheer fact is that it didn't matter what I said because he believed what he believed. The next incident that occurred that just exposed to me that this man had some deep-seated issues with racism was that it was just a small talk conversation. And one day we were discussing genealogy, and the question he was asked the question, was he aware if he had any ancestors of color? If there were any people of color in his lineage. And so his response to that question was, I'd rather be anything than black. And at this point, I mean, I'm just feeling, when he said that, he said it and he walked away. And it was very, it was just, you know, just disturbia. Is probably the best word to capture it because this was a man. He is a white American and he's in leadership in this church in New York City. And he's just, you know, speaking, you know, as Jesus said, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. At some point, we can give good public relations and politically correct responses, but at some point, what's truly in our heart is going to come out. And I was just disturbed. That's the best word to describe it, is just disturbed. And what ended up happening is that he did, there was just a final straw with him for me, in the sense of just sort of seeing really how ugly racism really gets in the church in these type of atmospheres where you really don't expect it. This was a multicultural church in New York City, and this man is in leadership in this church, and he has these type of deep-seated racial issues. So the final straw, the incident that really just it just hit home to me that, out of there's been so many incidents that I've had with racism, with white racism in churches and in ministry organizations, so many incidents. And it's just been this incident with this particular individual here in New York. What I'm going to tell you that he said at a church service was just like the, it was the final straw to me in the sense of understanding, someone thinking something that's just so like disturbing is the only word that I can use for it. So this is what he did. It was a church service, and he said that he stands up at this church service, or he's speaking, and somehow, some way, he gets into a discussion about that even though Black Americans were no longer in literal slavery, however, because of their dependence as a people group on the government, on government welfare benefits, because Black people are so dependent on government welfare benefits, they have enslaved themselves. They have made the government their master. This is what he was saying at a church service. And the following is literally, I'm going to mimic verbatim how he said how he said these words. He said, "Now the government is your master." Literally, "Now the government is your master." This man, leadership position at a church here in New York, a multicultural church, stands up in a church service and sarcastically impersonates a slave to get his point across, which, by the way, as I stated earlier, is not true. It's not true. The majority of Black people, Black Americans in this country, are not on government welfare benefits. And just the fact that someone is thinking like this and it's not true, and I've confronted him about this before, and he's still holding on to these beliefs. It just proves that when you have a racist perspective, when you are a racist person, or you have a racist perspective towards people, the facts really aren't quintessential. What you think, as the saying goes, perception is reality. So when your perception is racist, your reality is negative. And pretty much, up until this point, after my experiences at this particular church in New York, with the amount of racism, racial stereotype conversations, just, oh my gosh, if this man was working at a corporation, if he was a celebrity and he's made these comments that they got back to the public, if he was a politician, there would be some consequences and some repercussions for saying something like this. But because he was in the good old American church, where you can say things like this and get away with it, absolutely nothing happened. And, that is just, like I said, it's just disturbia. And I don't even know if saying that is an understatement. It is severely disturbing. Now, up until this point, my experiences with white racism in the Christian community was what I would classify as concealed, overt racism. In the case of the last incident that occurred, it was, as the last incident that I talked about, that was just overt racism when he stood up in this church service and made these comments and then impersonated a slave. Just horrible. But after I walked away from that, I gear switched, and it switched to a more sophisticated way of perpetuating racism, and that is covert racism. And what happened was that there was just some other ministries that I got involved with, and in one instance, the congregation was forming their fellowship circles, and I noticed week after week after week that the white people in this congregation did not fellowship with any of the non-white members after church was over. And they were practicing social racial segregation. They were endeavoring to get to know each other, but not the non-white members of the church, who were literally in the minority. And what I want to make sure I give a good word picture here. Ministry service, no issues at all. But after church was over with, when people were forming their fellowships, inviting people out to brunch, different things of that nature, I noticed and I watched week after week after week after week that the fellowship was very racially segregated. And I said, you know, this is it's just very sophisticated. It's a very sophisticated way to carry out racism. Because you can't, it's not, no one's saying anything. Their actions are speaking louder than words, really, than we ever really need words to speak. I compare racially based social segregation to watching a shoe salesman at a department store, a discriminative shoe salesman who's basically selecting the customers that he wants to work with based on appearance. He works with the customers who appearance-wise look like they have the money to make expensive purchases. He doesn't outrightly say, I'm only helping those who look like they have money. Of course not. He'll just leave those who he perceives to be the poorer customers or the poorer looking customers for another sales associate to work with. So this type of discrimination is not... It has to be discovered or exposed or noticed through observation and repeated observation. And this, as I stated earlier, is covert racism, which is the sophisticated, politically correct way to carry out racism in the United States right now, because overt racism is anti-American. So therefore, it has to be another way that, you know, people that do have racism in their heart, racial discrimination, racial segregation in their hearts, there has to be another way that they can perpetuate it without it being easily detected or noticed. And that's covert racism. Now, what I want to do now is that I want to talk very candidly about how these experiences with racism in the white Christian community, how they really made me feel, what are really the thoughts of my heart towards these experiences. That's what I want to just sort of talk about, take some time to talk about right now. Was I naive to believe that the white racism that I was subjected to while in junior high would be non-existent in the white Christian community? I spoke with my father about racism in the church, and he said to me that it was the church that engaged in racist practices and supported and promoted racism in the United States from the beginning. So it was no surprise to him. I spoke with a priest in the Greek Orthodox Church here in the New York metro area about my experiences with racism in churches in Manhattan, and that it really surprised me. And he sarcastically said, "Racism at churches in Manhattan? I can't believe that." It was like he was just like, "Really? Is that something that is noteworthy to you? That's really not anything unique for that culture or for that area." So I guess I was naive. But why was I naive? Why would I think that the Christian community would be a community that did not see people by color, but by the content of their heart? And I'm going to tell you why. One reason why I was so naive is because at the time, I didn't know anything about the long-standing relationship between racism and Western Christianity or the Christian church in the Western world. That's the biggest factor, my ignorance of this legacy. If I would have known that, I probably would have proceeded with caution when I set out after college to authentically be involved in the Christian community. The second naive assumption that I made, and this is probably really, it's so sad, and it's just things are so connected when you really look at the larger picture over a period of time. But my naivete was based upon another assumption, and the assumption was this, is that when I attended high school on the north side of Chicago, that was the first time in my life where I was in an environment where color was not a part of the relational equation. Race and just racism, racial segregation, just all these issues with people being so conscious of somebody's race when relating to them and interacting with them was not in this environment on the north side of Chicago when I was in high school at Lincoln Park. And I will tell you right now, whether the racism is overt or covert, that type of environment is a rarity in the United States, which is very, very, very sad considering the fact that this country is supposed to have this great Christian heritage. As I was about to submerge myself into the Christian community, I thought to myself, if the authentic spirit of liberalism could produce the colorblind world of the north side of Chicago, then how much more would the spirit of Christ and the followers of Jesus Christ, Christians, just view people as people and not through the eyes of classic American racism? But my hypothesis was wrong. Being a Black American and hearing the amount of derogatory comments I've heard firsthand about Black people in Christian settings, the disappointment I felt is to the point where I don't have words for it. There's not words to describe being amongst the body of Christ, where it says in the Bible that in Jesus Christ there's neither Jew nor Greek, neither female nor male, neither slave nor free, but we are all one in his body. And to just see the mentality, the consistent systematic mentality, the culture of racism in the Christian community is like I said, the best word that I can use for it is disturbia. One of the things that I did was that I reviewed the history of the racist attitudes that Europeans have had towards people of African descent, and specifically sub-Saharan African descent. And the reason why I did this was because I noticed that my experiences growing up and my experiences in the Christian community were that Black people are one of the main targets of white racism. The other target is Jewish people. And I believe that the Western Church's initial hostile stance towards Jewish people is the spiritual reason why racism and race-related issues like segregation and discrimination remain an issue in the Western Church when it should have never been an issue in the first place. And it has caused the Christian community to lag behind the larger society in addressing and resolving racial issues. I am going to talk about this spiritual root a little bit more in depth coming up. What I notice is that there's always a justification for being a racist, for looking down on people when actually there never is justification. But this is a deception from the devil, that you are justified to discriminate and be prejudiced. But in God's sight, no one is ever justified to be a racist or to practice any type of racial discrimination, segregation, or prejudice. Running concurrently with European colonization in the Americas, Africa, and Asia was the spread of Christianity, and would also spread with that were judgments against the people being colonized and oppressed. The Native Americans were savages, and the Africans were beasts in the eyes of these Christian Europeans who were not only setting out to subdue and to subjugate these quote-unquote subhuman beings, but also to convert them to Christianity. Just reading some of the literature of white missionaries in Africa during the time of colonization, if someone would have cut some of the paragraphs out of the writings so that I didn't know where they came from, I would have thought that I was reading literature from the KKK. And something that history does tell us is that the church, the Western church, their racial philosophies or better worded, their racist philosophies are actually at the root of a lot of extreme white supremacist groups, that they actually just got their beliefs from the Western church in Europe and also in the United States. So, you know, the dots get connected when you study things from their root. And that's what I did. I just went back and looked at the start of the church in the Western world, and at the very beginnings of it, there was discrimination, hostile discrimination, violent discrimination against Jewish people. So from the very root of this Western church, there was racism, and it was hostile and violent racism. So, you know, getting back to just sort of studying just some of the mentalities from a natural or physical perspective, what I notice is that the root of this long-seated animosity that white people have had towards black people for centuries is physical differences. People are notorious for looking down on people or despising people because they look different from them. It is a tool the devil uses to keep people divided. So well before, centuries before, there was all this violence in black neighborhoods, the proliferation of black street gangs, and the stereotype, the ridiculous stereotype of the black welfare recipient. Before these realities became in the black community, and these are things that are very recent. So circa the 1980s, around the time when crack cocaine hit the streets. So, you know, well before any of this happened, which these recent realities are being used as current justifications for racism and racial discrimination against black Americans. Before any of this, white people viewed people of African descent as the most inferior of all human beings, not because of anything they had done, just because of how they looked. This hostile blacks are the most inferior above all people mentality has been sustained for centuries. The recent realities in the black community just add fuel to that fire and give people a reason to persist in it. As I have previously disclosed, I have a bachelor's degree in journalism, and I love the art of storytelling. But if I didn't love journalism so much, I would have majored in sociology or psychology, because I love studying and researching social behaviors and the psyche behind why we do what we do. I love connecting spiritual roots with psychological roots and the behavior that manifests from those two unseen realities. The biggest thing that will get me looking for a spiritual root is when the natural behavior is illogical and it is systematic and generational. You see the same behaviors and the same thought patterns repeated over years and multiple generations, and it is illogical. Racism is illogical. There is not one quote-unquote race of people that are so superior that they are validated to look down on people of other races. Absolutely not. And the fact that people are racist or practice any type of racial discrimination or prejudice is just proof to the power of deception when we are not committed to the truth. When a person is deceived by the philosophy of racism and racial discrimination, their selective perception is tremendously reframing reality. And I want to say that again. When a person is deceived by the philosophy of racism and racial discrimination, their selective perception is tremendously reframing reality. Selective perception basically means that the way we understand the world around us, what is occurring around us, is based more on our beliefs than on reality. So what I want to do is to take the belief that racism is illogical and how it just absolutely distorts a person's perception, and apply that to how I evaluated my experiences with white American racism in the church. So as I stated earlier, the overwhelming majority of the racist comments that I've heard in settings with white Christians have been directed at black people. They've been very negative comments. They've been very stereotypical comments, hateful comments, degrading comments. And, you know, let's just review comments that, you know, looking at from a physical perspective. It's totally illogical for somebody to put down a person's God-given physical appearance. So whether it's hair texture, whether it's facial structure, whether it's body type, God created us all with diversity in our appearances. So for me, you know, the amount of negative comments that I've heard or stereotypical comments that I've heard about black people's hair texture, their body type, the origins of that is white supremacy, that the further away a person's appearance gets from this sort of Northern European or Nordic appearance, sort of the more inferior it is. And I've studied the European racial caste system or the European caste system based upon appearance. And it was literally a system where the Nordic appearance was considered the most esteemed, the pale of the palest, of the skin complexion, the blonde hair, the relaxed wavy hair texture, the blue eyes, and that everything that was furthest away from that was considered inferior. And the African appearance, the hair texture, the skin color, the facial structure is the extreme of that. And it's just looking down on people. And this is so ungodly. It's extremely ungodly. And it's such supremacy. It is such a supremacy mentality. And it's extremely just illogical for someone to think that physically your natural appearance is superior to someone to the extent that you can talk about and ridicule and satirize somebody else's natural God-given appearance. And I've heard so much of that. The other thing is just the experiences. So we just take, I'm speaking very candidly and I'm speaking the truth. And this is speaking the truth in love, because I absolutely have no bitterness or resentment towards any people group in this world at all. But at the same time, these things are happening in the Christian community in this country right now. I'm not speaking of things that are 10 years ago. I'm speaking of things that have occurred very recently. And they're systematic. There's stuff that I experienced 10 years ago, I've experienced in the past 12 months. So this needs to be addressed, because no matter how politically correct we're forced to be, what is in our hearts has to be changed authentically through prayer, through renewing our minds, through the Word of God, from a position of an open heart and not a heart that is congested and soiled and diluted with racism and race and racist ideologies. So let's just also talk about experience wise. In the United States, and also in Africa as well, people of African descent have been heinously oppressed, and for centuries. So just putting this into perspective, I am the first person, I'm in my family, not born into a United States that legally told them that they're less of a human being than a white person. That these were laws. I was born in 1979. I'm the first person in my family. So in my lineage, my grandparents, my parents, I'm the first generation born that it was born after the Civil Rights Act was passed, outlawing racial discrimination in this country. So I'm like a 10th generation American. If I count it, it's somewhere between 7 to 10 generations. Do you know how horrible that is, that a country is literally telling you that for periods there you could not even be found reading? You were forced to work for free. You could not get married, so you're having children that are not even born in marriage. You're having innately broken families because of this system of slavery and racism. You're innately the laws of this country are causing you to be poor. And even after the laws were changed, that doesn't change the culture. This was after that Civil Rights Act was passed in the 1960s, and a couple acts were passed. It doesn't. You're dealing with a country that's been operating with a racist culture. The laws sustained over such a long period of time creates a culture. So even though the law was changed, racism was still being practiced in all the institutions. Okay? So you're it's even they're still doing these studies today where they find out for the same job in the United States, a white man is making more money than everyone else. This they're still doing these studies today. They do studies that cite the racism in the criminal justice system. I recently saw a headline in the Huffington Post that said for drugs, white people do the crime, but black people do the time, talking about the huge disparity between government numbers about that the majority of people that are found to have drugs on them are white, but the majority of people in prison for drug-related crimes are black. The thing is that to look at a people group like black Americans who have been tremendously oppressed to the point of just living, I mean, just the lifestyle that the American lifestyle that people of African descent was introduced to was nothing but hardcore sheer oppression that legally was not reversed until the 1960s. And institutionally, this it's still going on right now. And to look at them and to say, ah, you low lives, look at you, why are you in this situation? Is absolutely, it is so racist. It shows the illogical aspect of racism. And the reverse is that racism just causes us to focus on the negative in other people's races, but not on the negative in our own race. And it's not just the Black Americans, the Native Americans. And I notice that no one looks at Native Americans and wonder why they're in the situation that they're in, why they're having the struggles that they're having. They're a people group that have been, they were utterly, almost absolutely wiped off the face of this earth. And when the people that survived the genocide in the Americas, they were oppressed. They were gathered up on reservations. They had their land taken from them. They were, nobody wonders that. But when it comes to Black Americans, it's always this, look at these low lives. Look at all, they're just, they're just a problem. No, Black people are not the problem. And the issue for me is that with the sheer amount of oppression, the just that lasted for so long before it was even legally overturned. Forget the institutional, because institutional racism is still very much alive. The fact that there's even a black middle class, the fact that there's even black people that have been history makers. I mean, awesome, Nobel Peace Prize winners, black people that have started colleges and universities. I mean, culture, world changers. The fact that there's even black people that have accomplished these things in the face of this heinous oppression in our country is a testimony. And if you were not, if people were not so, if someone was not so racist, they would see the truth that, you know what? This is a miracle. This is a miracle that, you know what, there's not even more black people that aren't on welfare. It's a miracle there's not even more black men in prison. It's a miracle because the racism and the oppression in this country is it's been so hostile for centuries that the fact that black people even have a remnant that have survived that and been successful and thrived is just a miracle, and it's amazing. But it would be a racist person who wouldn't see that. No, they're going to focus on the negative. And in focusing on the negative, they're going to actually not put it in context of the experience. They're just going to make it like, oh, you low lives, you black people are just low lives. I've heard that so many times from white people that are Christians, that, like I said, the only word that I can use for it is disturbia. And it's like, if you are truly wanting to look down on people for negativity, you would despise the skin that you're in. It's just the simple truth. But no, when someone is racist, the idea is to look down on other people's race. It's not, don't look down on your own skin color. And the way that white supremacy, the ideology of white supremacy works, is that white people were justified to mistreat people of other races in other countries or in the United States. They were justified to do that because those people were inferior to them. And the Christianized white supremacy doctrine said that God had ordained, had predestined white people to treat people like this, that he had basically approved it and put his stamp of approval on that. So this is why you have the thought process creates just a root, a way of thinking that if you're just yielding and engaging that, you're not aware of the root of how you're thinking. And the thing is that if you are a person that you look at, you know, a headline or headlines, and you see a black man have done this or done that, and you begin to, you know, make it into some racist type of deal, you could actually do that to white men. You could actually say, you know what, white men have killed so many people in the United States, so many people around the world for centuries, and held so many people in hostage and bondage for centuries, that you could actually hate white men. But racism, that's not how racism works. Racism makes you look at people of other races in a negative perspective, but not your own race. And that's something that I really want to point out. There is by no means any justification. No people group in this country or in this world have a right and have any reason to look down on anybody else. It's not even, you have no justification at all. The only reason why that would be occurring is just because of the sheer fact that racism is illogical. It is at the root of it is a spirit of division that has all different types of philosophies and justifications attached to it. And that is just, you know, that is something that I've thought about that has been very strong on my heart. Is people looking down on people and finding justifications to despise, to discriminate against people, but they won't turn that on their own skin color. And the ideology of white supremacy has really led, when I listen to the racism that I've heard from white Christians, it is so very much rooted in the ideology of white supremacy. And it's something that, you know, there has to be just a deliverance from that. And it's just the bottom line. Now, how I've been affected by these experiences with racism and in the white Christian community, it's psychologically, it's just made me more aware of it. And in times past, or at the beginning of my journey as an adult, as someone who is a recent college grad, at the beginning of my journey, when I was, as I stated earlier, naive enough to believe that, you know, the church would be this colorblind operation, because that's truly Jesus Christ. He's colorblind in the sense of he's not judging people and relating to people based upon the color of their skin, but upon the content of their heart. So I thought that, you know, his followers would be like him. But I was wrong. For the most part, I was wrong. I don't mean to, I'm not over exaggerating. I'm not being negative. For the most part, I was wrong. And pretty much psychologically, I just have a greater awareness of it now. I really do. I don't have any prejudice in my heart or hatred or bitterness or resentment or anger in my heart. I'm just more aware of it. Okay. There's just, as I stated, there's just a deception going on, where people want to give the appearance of, but behind closed doors, there's another story. This salad bowl multiculturalism that's going on in, you know, specifically non-denominational churches, but not only non-denominational churches, it's just, it's not a true melting pot. It's not an authentic melting pot. And I truly did not expect to encounter racial, social segregation and just outright concealed overt racism in churches in New York, because of, you know, New York is such a staunchly, you know, liberal environment. And just to think that the racism of the Christian culture would even, you know, really control the environment in this city is pretty strong. And, you know, just going forward, I've made a decision that, you know, I need to be connected to ministries that and churches that authentically promote diversity. I really have to, because that's just something that's in my heart, is an authentic multicultural environment. And there's a difference between token diversity, tolerating diversity, and living an authentically diverse lifestyle, both personally and professionally. It is a difference between them. There's a difference between a person that has boundaries and isms and schisms in their heart and how they're going to interact and engage people that are a different race from them. And there's a difference in that type of person and a person who is authentically living like Jesus. They're not engaging people based upon the color of their skin, but based upon the content of their heart. A beautiful verse that just depicts the diversity of the family of God is found in the book of Revelations, chapter 7, verse 9, and it says, "After this I looked, and there before me was a great multitude that no one could count, from every nation, tribe, people, and language, standing before the throne and before the Lamb. They were wearing white robes and were holding palm branches in their hands." Jesus Christ isn't a racist, and he also isn't a racial segregationist. In the book of Acts, chapter 10, verse 34, it says, "Peter then said, 'Now I am certain that God treats all people alike.'" And I'm going to say that again. "I am certain that God treats all people alike." Racism is illogical. And racism in the Christian community, any type of racial discrimination, racial segregation, and so on, is even more illogical. The fact that the Western church has had such a long-standing relationship with racism and other racial issues is an absolute tragedy. So that concludes this podcast. This is, as I stated at the beginning, this is part two of a four-part series entitled Gandhi's Rejection. So I would love for you to join me for part three. If you didn't listen to part one, the introduction, I strongly encourage that you go back and check that out, because that gives a background. It lays the foundation for what this series is about. So thank you so much for joining me. Once again, this is Nyamka. This podcast is Rebranded Christianity, and I hope that you have a good day.